You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday afternoon, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. Really not a very good start to the week, David. Obviously, we've got hours to go yet, certainly in the United States of America, and another hour on the JSE. But it's not bouncing back. I mean, it's been a steady decline, and some of the moves are starting to get a little bit choppy.
Uncomfortable, yeah, very much. When you think of the news, I mean, for the last couple of weeks, we haven't had anything really to draw us back into the market. There's been no improvement on the, you know, on the infection. In fact, things are starting to worsen now in Europe and certainly in the UK. Even in America, there's still a lot of concerns. It hasn't fully opened up. There's so much debate about what the next move is. So, there's talk of a vaccine, and we know that somewhere down the line a vaccine's going to come. Then on top of it, you've had the WeChat issue. You've had the TikTok issue. We've had this Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, she dies before she's even buried. They're already fighting about her replacement. And it's just, you know, it's going to cause a huge boil over in the American people that you should replace a Supreme Court judge, which is for the American people, you know, a few days before the election. No one's arguing that Trump might be reelected. All they're saying is that, you know, it shouldn't happen at this stage. Let the new president decide whether it's Trump or someone or Biden.
Well, this is what Lindsey Graham said during the Obama years. He CNN keeps on playing it, and they show him saying, "Do not elect the new person until the new president is elected." Yeah. And now he's saying exactly the opposite, and saying that Trump must put this new person in. And the person he wants to put in, well, there's two. There's an Hispanic lady who's less experienced, and probably the one that Trump wants the most is an anti-abortion, not far right, but right-wing Republican. I don't know. It's actually quite disturbing.
I mean, Trump has been married three times. I don't know how many women he's had sex with. I don't know what, you know, his whole history is around that. And here he's talking about anti-abortion as though he's some kind of saint, you know, that has been placed there by God. I mean, his whole attitude is just so out of sync with everything.
With reality.
With reality. You know, I don't know how to explain him. I'm saying, why is he doing this? And, you know, this is the American people. I mean, do any sensible, decent person who believes in democracy, who just believes in common decency, would say, you know, for the people, we don't have to rush this through, even though we can. But that's his nature. You know, he's divisive. He causes this kind of anger, hopefully splitting America so that he can, you know, he splits America into two sides, that there's no one in the middle, and hopefully he gets in that way. But, I mean, I have never seen, you know, certainly not in my foreseeable, in my recent memory, have I seen America in this kind of state. You know, Lindsay, I was brought up in the 60s and 70s, and I remember the Vietnam War, and I remember the issues there, and America was in an awful mood in those days. But that's, what, 40, 50 years ago. And it seems the first time that we're seeing it.
You talk about God and you talk about Trump, and there was a great tweet from John Cleese yesterday, which I've just pulled up now, and he says the following: "The single most depressing thing about Trump supporters is that a lot of them are evangelicals. The idea that Christ might approve of this vile, sleazy, pride-filled and rudderless oaf is an insult to his teaching." It's very true. You can't be a Christian and be a Trump supporter at the same time.
I know.
Preferably be neither, but anyway.
You know, we can get frustrated, but that's American politics today. But you know what? You know, his whole way, Lindsay, also in the 60s and 70s here, in the apartheid era, it was very much, you felt that same anger and what's the word? You know, I'm trying to think of another word for anger. You just wanted things to boil over. You were so angry with the way that people conducted themselves, and with the way that the nationalist government conducted themselves, the kind of laws they introduced, without any concern about people, without any, just awful, you know, vile, vile acts. And you feel the same about the American people, you know. Having being brought up during that era, you know, I never thought that I'd have another time where I felt this kind of disgust at people. You know, anyway, my moaning doesn't help, but I must say that from the market's point of view, I think it is starting to fall over. You know, people are starting to feel very angry. And I think almost as a matter of respect for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she was a wonderful woman who, particularly from a female point of view, you know, she championed women's rights and, you know, for many, many years and fought a lot of, you know, a lot of laws in that regard.
Yes.
And that weren't even thought about. That they were part of the law, you know, that they were anti-feminine, you know, anti-woman, or what's the correct word?
Misogynist.
But I mean, they were leaning towards males, and she challenged them in every respect.
But the thing about RBG is that she was, as they call her now, is that she took the Constitution and she read the Constitution and she just said the obvious. It's unconstitutional to discriminate against me. And the reason that she got where she was, perversely, is because she went to a law firm and she couldn't get into the law firm, or she couldn't rise up the ranks in the law firm because she was a woman. So she went to the Constitution and she said, no, you can't do this. It's unconstitutional. There's nowhere in the Constitution that says that I shouldn't be a partner in this law firm, which is so impressive. But it's also very sad because other people didn't do it before she did.
No, I know. And that's why I'm saying, to honor a woman like that, you know, don't almost celebrate her death so we can push in another conservative judge, you know, that's going to help Trump get his votes. I don't know. Anyway, I feel so disappointed, so let down by the American nation. And I've always held him in high esteem, you know, and it's at all levels. I mean, even this TikTok deal. The way that he's
now Walmart are in there. What is that all about?
Well, yeah, I don't know why Walmart are in. I think I can't talk for the Walmart. I don't know their CEOs. I don't know much about. I know the family, but you know, Larry Ellison is a big supporter of Trump from Oracle, and you knew that once this was going to Oracle because he's a big supporter, and when you say a supporter, that comes in dollars and cents, you know. So Trump dare not question this deal and or stand in the way, and you know, throughout there he's been praising Ellison, he's a nice man and so on. And of course the first you come to the conclusion that this is a political deal, that he's interfering from a political point of view, you know, to gain further mileage and maybe even further support. So I mean, that's his nature. Who does this?
He does. That's he who does it. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Anyway, and he's doing it with virtual impunity. I mean, Lindsey Graham is supporting him. No Republican will stand up against him. He's got 96% approval rating amongst Republicans. It's a disgrace. But you know what might happen is this Deutsche Bank and European Bank story that's come out. And if you just go to any website, I'm reading from CNBC.com, the international version, it says here, Deutsche Bank tops list of suspicious transactions among leaked US government files. Germany's Deutsche Bank appears to have facilitated more than half of the leaked $2 trillion worth of suspicious transactions flagged to the US government over nearly two decades, reported German broadcaster Deutsche Welle. Now, of course, Deutsche Bank is Mr. Trump's bank. Yes, it is. Deutsche Bank has funded an awful lot of the many failed real estate transactions of the so-called Trump empire.
Is that so?
Yes. So this is very interesting that the CNBC, which is not a big fan of Mr. Trump, has put Deutsche Bank at the front, on the front page. But Mr. Trump must be feeling a little bit nervous now, because this is a big one. That's one of the reasons why the European stocks led the other markets down, because this is quite a big thing. Trillions of dollars worth of suspicious transactions. Suddenly been leaked out. I mean, billion here was sent to somebody from someone else. It was one of Putin's oligarchs in his pocket sent this there. It's a fascinating story that's unraveling here, and we've only seen the beginning of it.
And I only picked up the HSBC part, you know, and the North Korea part. So I've been reading headlines, but not having gone into the articles or the full details of this. But a lot of banks have been implicated. And I mean, at a time where you would expect, with all the kind of laws that have been put in, that there would have been some kind of end to this, unless this has gone over you know, this has been happening for decades. But, I mean, it's just another story, you know, at a time where the markets are so sensitive.
It's 2 decades, actually, that they've got.
Is it?
Yeah, 2 decades. And it's been going on, and obviously it's been investigated, but suddenly it's out in the open, and therefore the situation is going to be accelerated, or the investigations will be accelerated. Otherwise, there'll be an uproar, and people will be in front of Congress testifying, all that sort of thing. But it is very interesting. And the banks, of course, are under massive pressure. When we started speaking, David, the S&P was down around about 1.7%. It's now down 2.2%, the futures, that is. The NASDAQ was down around about 1.1%, then went down 1.75%, now down 1.3%. It's very, very choppy. And it tells me that there's a few of those private investors that have woken up on a Monday and saying, what do I do now? Maybe I'm getting a margin call from Robinhood. Maybe the website has crashed or something like that. And I'm not singling out Robinhood. I'm just saying that the market is in its third week of losses now. If it ends down this week, it'll be 3 weeks of losses, which is a significant run of losses.
No, it's not. There's been nothing to keep us in, and I think the bad news just keeps accumulating. And against that, I don't think any new money is going to be attracted. There might not be a rush out, but certainly there's not a rush in. And whenever there's no rush out, when there's no rush in, then it's very easy to sell down the market. So I'm not sure where this is going to end. I don't know whether this is going to be a major sell-off. My own view is that with the election coming up, that Congress is going to run, or there's going to be a rush to Washington, and some kind of package is going to be introduced, because I don't think they can afford this to get out of hand, particularly on an economic point of view, especially trying to save these economies. So I'm not banking on it. But I think that having delayed any kind of help, there might be some kind of move in that direction, both Democrats and and Republicans. So I'm interested to see how far this goes. This bank probe does go, and who's implicated. But I think it's all of these issues as well. I initially thought it might have been the lockdown or further lockdown, but I don't think that's going to be as severe as the first lockdown that we saw some time ago. I think there might be restrictions, and there might be a bit of care. I don't know what's happening in the UK as well. That also seems to be very difficult.
Well, what's happened in the UK is an interesting one, because there's some particular agency that has a model, a so-called model, and they say that by October, end of October, there will be 50,000 new cases per day in the United Kingdom, which is quite a lot. And then by mid-November or end of November, I think it was, they said there'll be 200 deaths per day. Now, 200 deaths versus 50,000, you can say that's quite small. But on the other hand, you've got flu season coming as well. And that won't help matters. So I don't know. It's certainly Europe is going to close down again, without a doubt.
As the winter comes.
Of course it does. I mean, even in Rotterdam, the way the Dutch do things is far more measured. You can go to a pub now until 2 o'clock in the morning. And now they've said, no, you can only go there till 1 o'clock in the morning. That's the first thing that they do. So you go, I don't know what type of people are going out to a pub until 2 in the morning on a Monday anyway. Certainly not me. I'll be asleep by 10. But they are starting to close down a little bit. But the UK, the UK is in trouble. And I think Mr. Johnson is a little bit of a headless chicken at the moment. And they may have to close the whole thing down, but by varying degrees. They'll do it by degrees. But yes, it's not looking good, David. It's September. It's 29 degrees here today. But in a week's time, it'll be 15. And before you know it, it'll be winter. And now winter, you're in trouble.
And you've got the election coming up. But I don't think we must underrate what this is going to do. You know, as the tempers pick up and as the rhetoric starts to go, I think people are going to feel very uncertain, because I don't think there's any clear winner in this one. No one wants to bet on who's going to end up, and what's going to happen if it should be another Trump presidency. So I think people feel very uncertain, very insecure, and very unhappy. So it's the companies are still probably, as things settle down, companies will continue. Facebook will continue. Zuckerberg will continue to look for new acquisitions, and everybody will continue, you know, do their own thing. I don't think it's going to throw corporate America off rail. But I mean, the mood is very dark, and people feeling very angry about the way things are. They're feeling angry about themselves, you know, about the world, you know. And I don't even think on top of COVID. Yes, you know, those are frustrations we're getting used to understanding, and I think we're looking more at some kind of solution rather than the infection rate. But I think it's just the way that people are going at each other, you know, this constant bickering and fighting and issues, you know, from WeChat to TikTok to everything. And I think that to me is more difficult to handle.
New lows on the S&P futures as we speak now, yeah. 3,232, which is a 2.5% fall. And on the NASDAQ futures, not so bad, only down 1.5%, but also very close to its lows, which is disturbing. Of course, there'll be a turnaround later on this evening, but at the moment, the market's under pressure, enormous pressure. What happened on the JSE today? I mean, the JSE at one stage,
the same thing.
1,500 points down on the all share, I think, at one point. Then it rallied to about 900 down. Just refresh my memory now. What's it doing now as I get my screen back up?
Well, if you look at the – sorry, I'm just going to get the my screen up here. We're down about 2.5%, but it would have been worse. Yes. What happened is the Rand, which was 1624 at opening, is now 1683, which I need to – calculate what that means.
That's another bet I've won, by the way, with a person who I won't mention. It was 16.
The Rand is 1684, 3%. 3% move in the Rand.
Big move.
And that comes at the speed of lightning.
Yeah.
You know, when all the analysts were calling it down to 15.5 and the fair, even the Reserve Bank on Thursday were talking about the Rand and the fair value and so on. But what they don't understand is that, you know, when markets do get like this, just how sensitive we are to any kind of fear in the in global markets, and how fast things can turn around. So where's this 21.58 against the pound, 1980 against the euro, and 1685 against the dollar, and that's 3% is a big move. It's a massive move.
Yeah, it really is a massive move. The euro dollar, of course, is 0.75% better. In other words, the euro has fallen by 0.75%. I don't know why people are going into the dollar. Mm. Maybe it's a safe haven status. I think that's what it is. If you apply that same argument about safe havens, David, why is the gold price down $27? I suppose it's with the strength of the US dollars. It's a very confusing Monday to me.
It's those markets are very confusing as well. Whether speculators have been caught on the wrong side, you know, as you mentioned in the early stages, whether they're forced to, their margin calls, whatever it is. But it's rather unusual that gold should go down at a time like this. And it also, you know, you've got to question what's happening to gold, because these are the ideal times that people rush into gold as a safety margin. And also the story that people were buying gold because of inflation. Well, what now? No inflation? Is that why gold's going down? It just doesn't make sense. So it could be because there's a huge amount of speculation in gold, like every other asset. Oh, well, we may as well hold gold, you know, we'll hold shares, we'll hold equities, and we'll hold a bit of gold here, and suddenly everything goes down and you throw it all out. I haven't even seen the U.S. 10-year, because I don't think that spiked that much. It was up slightly, but I don't think dramatically. I haven't seen it yet, but I don't think it's over 70. I'm trying to find it on my screen.
Okay, you do that, and I'm just looking at the Stock Exchange News Service announcements today, and there's very little, actually. It's one of those weeks where it's a short week in South Africa. Yeah. Thursday is a holiday. It's Heritage Day, one of the better public holidays, I have to admit. People who actually
National Friday.
That's what some people say, yeah. Yes, it's a good day, but so people will take Friday off as well. So essentially it's a three-day week, I think. No, you know that's the case. Of course it's the case.
That's South Africa.
Yeah.
My daughter, she works for, I better not mention it, she works for an international, for a local firm here in America.
Oh, yes.
And whenever there's a holiday, gone. She says, if it wasn't load shedding, it's a public holiday.
I think we have 12 a year, actually, which is quite fun. Hulamin came out with their numbers today, unaudited, condensed, consolidated, interim results.
Yeah.
Share price up 2.1%. Did you look at the Hulamin results? They came out at 9:15 this morning.
Yeah, there's nothing to look at. It's just a tragedy, that company.
Yes.
And I think it has today a market cap of its market cap. I was looking this morning.
Is it 400 million or not even?
300 million.
Yeah.
300 million.
Yes.
I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous because the plant that they have in their factories must cost significantly more than that. I mean, this is a proper operating business, you know, that puts aluminium in and comes out with either cans or rolled aluminium, you know, which they use for cans or they use for tin foil or used for many, many other applications.
Yes.
And, you know, that it should be trading at 300 million is I think one's got to start to question maybe management, you know, that they haven't swung this around. There's always been issues of turnaround and next quarter is going to be better or next half year. It never really happens. But I mean, they're up slightly today, but the market cap of 300 million just tells it all. 94 cents, I think, when they unbundled from Tonga, if I recall, they were trading at 40 rand. So I mean, just been obliterated.
Anyway, you were looking at something. Companies. You were trying to get some chart up or something, David.
I was trying to get the US 10-year. I've got my charts, bonds there. Well, I don't know if this is up to date. I've got facts set here, so it will give me hopefully an up to date. I don't know whether Lindsay, if I'm on the cheap package, it only updates, I don't know, sometime tomorrow. You know, if you're on the expensive package, it updates straight away.
Do you want me to tell you what it is? I mean, I was going to let you get the glory, but it's actually 0.653. That's what it is.
Well, which is
a 6% move to the downside. Mm. In other words, 0.041, the yield has gone down. 6% fall, which is in a big market, that's a big fall.
Yeah. You see, I'm only looking at the 18th of September, which is not at the 0.69. So my chart only updates at the end of the day.
Don't worry. Well, after this, you can put your slippers on and have a cup of tea.
That's
Don't worry.
That's been going flat since March, since they took rates down as well. But it is heading in a direction which is downward. I think the low we caught was 0.54 in the 6th of August.
Yeah.
So the traders they're playing the capital game. They're not buying this for yield.
New
gold 1896, eh? Just fallen below 1900.
US S&P 500 futures now at new lows, down 2.75%. It's just relentless, relentless, this selling. And it can always, of course, turn around if some algorithmic program comes in a couple of hours' time. We may even end up on the day or something.
Hmm? That takes us – that we were up – the S&P was up about 2.5% on the year.
Yes.
So I would imagine this will leave it flat. You know,
well, no, actually more. So, if it was up 2.5%, it's coming off a higher base, so it'll be down on the year now. Yeah, and don't forget that the old high was around about 3,400 on the futures in February. Mm. Then we went crashing down to 2,170 or something like that, and then we went up again. Mm. But it's almost as though one of those technical formations where it's what they call a false break. It goes back above the old high. Everybody gets stopped out. All the shorts have to buy back their shorts, and now it's down again. I think it's very bearish. I'm sorry, but technically
this could your testing point or your 200 moving day average is around about 3,100.
Okay,
so I think that will be the level that gets everybody scared.
Yes.
You know, if it doesn't bounce off that, then it's already gone through your 50-day moving average. It's sliced through that. So this will be your next testing point. I'm trying to work out where it was on the first day of 27th of 12, 3110. So we're still up slightly.
Are we? Okay.
We're still up slightly up for the year. I can't say that about the JSE. And I certainly can't say that about the FTSE.
But anyway, September has been a very interesting month so far. It's 21 days into it. David, we've talked about the markets. So we now need to talk about football because there are two things I'd like to say to you. There's been a glut of goals in the English Premier League. The first two games that Leeds United have been involved in have been 4-3 defeat against Liverpool, 4-3 win against Fulham. Spurs beat Southampton 5-2. My observation is as follows. The players are unprepared. and therefore they're a little bit slack. And also they don't have the pressure of the crowd, so they're maybe just treating these games as not training sessions or friendly matches, but there's certainly not the intensity, and they're making mistakes in defence. I mean, 5-2, Southampton 2, Tottenham 5, Leeds 4, Fulham 3. They're all over the place at the moment, which makes for good viewing, I must say.
No, it's nice to see goals, but I think you're dead right. I don't think the tightness has been there, and I don't know what it is, whether the crowds are making that difference, that there isn't that intensity of someone shouting at you or making you work that much harder. And it doesn't matter whether you play at home or away, and that tells. Yeah. I don't think that makes any difference. I was disappointed yesterday. I looked forward to the Chelsea-Liverpool game, and then they were terrible. Oh, they were terrible. You know, they just didn't look like they were going to do anything. Mm-mm. But naturally, when Christensen was sent off, is that his name? Yeah. I mean, which was the most hideous, stupid thing to do. Well, that was the end of the game. You knew, not against Liverpool. And they won.
And the goalkeeper trying to play it out of his own box when there's a Liverpool player in front of him. That was a shocker. Do you know how much they paid for him? Do you know how much they paid for him 2 years ago? $91 million.
I can't believe it, because you knew this was going to happen from the minute he got that ball. You knew that he was going to do that. Mm. And where this came up, this is something that's only happened towards the end of last season and the beginning of this season, this playing out from the back.
Yes.
And it's so easy when you've got a team like Liverpool who are up all the time and who are always winning the ball. You just say, for God's sake, just get rid of that ball. Just boot it out.
Hoof it up there. Get it out of your box, because they're going to score. And of course they did. And the other thing that annoys me, I mean, I enjoyed the fact that Crystal Palace beat Manchester United 3-1 at Old Trafford. I enjoyed that enormously. The only thing that I didn't like about it was the fact that there wasn't 65, 70,000 Mancunians watching the game to be disappointed. But to be fair, I was very sad. I felt sorry for Manchester United with the penalty that was retaken, and it was retaken 1 minute after play had restarted, because the VAR showed that David De Gea, the Manchester United goalkeeper, had moved slightly. And I think that is the most pathetic, stupid, nitpicky rule you've ever seen, because the player that's taking the kick can do anything he likes. He can run forward, he can stop, he can kick the ball, he can pretend to kick the ball, but the goalkeeper must stand rooted to the spot. I think it's the worst rule in football at the moment, and I feel sorry for Man United on that front. But well done, Crystal Palace. That was fun.
And Arsenal was shocking. They were also, anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
We'll see Man City tonight.
Yes, we will. There's two games tonight. I'm just looking forward to it a lot. Okay, David Shapiro. Right. Thank you very much for your time. David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.